J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
City sidewalks, busy sidewalks, dressed in holiday style. In the air, there's the feeling of Christmas. People passing, children laughing, and for mile after mile, on every street corner, you'll hear silver bells, it's Christmas time in the city.
Last night, my child looked up at me and said, "Uncle Steve?" He didn't know I was his father, and I didn't know for sure either. I just assumed I was. I'd had his mother so many times, and in so many different ways. The odds were with me. Anyway, he looked up at me and said, "What does Christmas mean to you?" And I said, "Lemuel, Christmas is a time for giving, a time for receiving, a time for eggnog and rum, a time for cutting down trees and hanging plastic doodads on them and watching them die slowly in your living room, catch fire and burn down your house and all your possessions. It's a time for buying things that haven't sold all year long, wrapping them up in shiny paper, and giving them to your friends, return them and find out you got it on sale. They can only exchange them for things of equal value, like charcoal briquettes or matchbooks with other people's names on them. A time for giving your wife that special coat she always wanted. Those seals didn't need their fur anyway. What do they want it for? They're dead already. It's a time for eggnog and brandy, driving home on icy streets, accidentally nudging the car next to you off the bridge, into the frozen river, watching the car sink, seeing the bubbles float up under the water. It's time to sip an eggnog martini and think about the poor, and talk of feeding the naked and clothing the hungry. A time to get Christmas cards from all your friends that Consolidated and Allied and Acme. A time for seeing all those happy children sitting on Santa's lap at Toyland, thinking to yourself, maybe I'll be a Santa next year. 12 years old is not so far from 18. Maybe I should be laying a little groundwork for the future. It's a time for parties at the office with eggnog and vodka, telling your boss what you really think of him while he gets a perfect Xerox of your wife's rear end. Time for sitting by the hearth, sipping eggnog and tequila, with your feet up on a burning log, and realizing that Uncle Walt has been in your garage for 45 minutes with the car running. You say to yourself, "Damn, Uncle Walt, you were supposed to bring me back more eggnog." And that, Lemuel, is what Christmas means to me.
Soon it will be Christmas Day.
Now I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous, don't be rocky.
You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Thursday, December 8th, 2022, 69 days until pitchers and catchers report to Jupiter, Florida. And for the first time, one of the catchers reporting to Jupiter, Florida will be Mr. Wilson Contreras. What are they saying right now?
55 RBIs. He's a three-time All-Star, won that World Series championship with the Cubs. And sources saying that the deal's for 5 years worth $87.5 million. Well, the biggest free agent on the market was Aaron Judge. Aaron He's now headed back to the New York Yankees.
Well, heading back, he never left. This Wilson Contreras thing, I posted it yesterday. First of all, yesterday morning, I said, the deal is really, really close. And somebody said, how many years? Three or four? I said, I heard five. And I said, the deal is imminent, could even be announced today. I don't even think it was 3 hours later that they did announce it, and it is for, as you just heard, 5 years. So that's good news, folks. That's good news. But I have talked about this before. I'm going to talk about it again. This insane, absurd, illogical, stick up your ass that so many people who live in the St. Louis region have about the city of Chicago, really, I mean, it's embarrassing to watch. As somebody who didn't grow up in St. Louis and somebody who's from Chicago, you just sort of look at it and go, what? What, guys? What? You have this sick, twisted obsession. Not everybody, but, you know, I posted this thing yesterday and you would think it would be good news. It's like, well, who do you want? If you don't want Wilson Contreras, who do you want? And then it becomes apparent that these are not real baseball fans. They only know of one team in baseball, and that's the Cardinals. And that's wonderful. It's great that you're dedicated to the hometown boys. That's fantastic. However, in a situation like this, your empty head about the remaining 99% of the game of baseball really, really starts to make noise. It's like if you took a metal can and put a rock in it and then just started shaking it all day. That's what it sounds like on the internet and on social media when people start talking about Chicago stuff. People who do that just look like a bunch of hayseeds. There are very few comparisons, legitimate comparisons, that you can make between St. Louis and Chicago. They're both Midwestern cities, and that's about it. Chicago's got like 11 million people, and even though the state of Illinois, you know, that's declining in terms of population, city of Chicago and the Chicagoland region not really having any problems, like, you know, 11 million people. St. Louis, do I have to remind you about not only the reality, but also the perception around the country of the city of St. Louis? Okay, this is from Kelly. The signing of Contreras is worrisome to me. It appears he only caught 57 games last year, played 24 in left field and 3 at first base, and started 30 at DH. He missed a bunch of games due to an ankle injury, so this is supposed to be the starting catcher for the next 5 years. I'll be rooting for him to do well, but just call me skeptical. First of all, I'm not sure those numbers are right. I will look it up, but that doesn't sound familiar to me. But as I said, I posted this right underneath that comment. I said, well, at least Wilson Contreras missed games because of an actual injury instead of because of a basketball team in the Dominican. Here's one person that still wants Andrew Kisner. Fine. You want his 198 batting average too? Wilson Contreras is not only a good defensive catcher who's going to throw guys out at second, he's got a big fucking bat. I want Murphy. He's a better fit. I think Contreras is an insult to Yachty. Somebody named Bonnie sends that in. I responded. I said, I guess you don't watch a lot of baseball games other than the Cardinals. Otherwise, you'd recognize the absurdity of your statement. By the way, Lou Brock, Bruce Sutter, Lee Smith, Tony La Russa, and about 10 dozen other players who played for the Cardinals were at some time in their careers Chicago Cubs. This is just embarrassing. It's embarrassing. Should be very, very happy about this. Jose Quintana leaving. That's our best pitcher. Was our best pitcher. You want to get upset about something, get upset about that. JC, what's the difference between a high chair and Herschel Walker? A high chair will support a child. Good morning, everybody. I don't know. There's somebody always running around trying to regulate the internet and social media, and Elon Musk is saying all sorts of inflammatory, irresponsible things, but he owns it now, so you know, he owns the Twitter thing. I'm not on Twitter. I won't get on Twitter. I'll never be on Twitter. I hate Twitter. And I know you can't do this, but I can dream, can't I? I think there should be some sort of test, a little quiz that you should have to answer questions like every 3 months to make sure that you're just not an idiot mucking up the entire internet and social media because you're stupid or you don't pay attention or you don't read. Just, you know, three or four quick questions like, who's the Republican trying to become the Speaker of the House right now? And if you don't know the answer to that, it's like, I'm sorry, you can't play. Come back when you have some idea what the fuck you're talking about. I, of course, would write the questions. Pot is legal today in Missouri starting today, but it's probably still going to be a while before you're going to be able to buy it because there's all a bunch of legal hurdles and stuff like that. But as of today, technically, legally, you're no longer required to present some sort of medical marijuana card. You can buy it just for recreational use. But as I said, it could be a while before that actually happens. But we'll pay attention. Quote of the day yesterday. Unbeknownst to any of us, David Letterman was in Ukraine in October and recorded an interview in an underground bunker with Volodymyr Zelensky, and that is running on Netflix. But the quote, the line that I heard yesterday, every war is a war against children. And when you think about it, that's true because those are the people who are suffering the worst. You know, little kids who can't have it explained to them why you don't have food, water, electricity, why we're having to go through this. Mommy, I'm cold. Mommy, I'm hungry. The terror of having bombs going off in your neighborhood. The unfathomable amount of damage you're doing to that child's psychological health. Who knows how many years from now? I can't even talk about the darn thing. Time magazine named Zelensky Person of the Year. They said Zelensky's success as a wartime leader has relied on the fact that courage is contagious. That's very eloquent writing, by the way. Over the course of the next couple of weeks, you will start to see people on television messing up because it's not their normal job. You got to remember that if somebody is a reporter on Channel 2, Channel 4, Channel 5, a reporter, let's go to the scene right now, the fire, here's Bob, and then Bob takes over. You know, field reporters. But all of those people, as they were coming up in the business in smaller markets, at some point or another, were anchor people. They actually hosted the news. They read you the news. They sat on the set and looked into the camera and read off the teleprompter. And a lot of those people will be getting another opportunity, if that's the correct word, to be doing that here over the next couple of weeks because we have Christmas coming up. And it, you know, some of it depends on how your contract is written and things like that. But over the course of the next couple of weeks, people will say, okay, I am not from St. Louis. My whole family is in San Francisco, and I would like to see them at Christmas. And they're like, okay, well, you can have the week of Christmas off. Oh, wait a minute. That's right. You work in local TV, and we treat people in local TV like shit. So, no, you can't, but here's what we will do. You just pretend Christmas is next week, and you go to San Francisco a week or two before Christmas, and you're just going to have to imagine. So that person goes to San Francisco and celebrates Christmas on December 17th because they got to be back in St. Louis to work during Christmas week. But when you're back in St. Louis and working on Christmas Day, I'll tell you what the station is going to do. The station is going to, we're going to spring for a turkey, and we'll put that right there next to the assignment desk in the newsroom, and you guys can just pick at it all day. So anyhow, in the meantime, a lot of people that you don't normally see anchoring television news will start popping up. And that's really fun because they make a lot of mistakes. It's very entertaining. But I bring all this up for the simple reason that the week before Christmas is generally a real downtime in not only local television, but also network television, which I don't understand, by the way, because, you know, everybody's off work. Everybody's sitting around, you know, making pies and thawing out turkeys and hanging decorations and all that. And the television is always on. So I don't know why they don't take advantage of that, because I think the audience is huge. But, you know, a lot of reruns and a lot of Christmas movies and stuff like that. Well, that might be changing this year. It appears to be the case because it was announced yesterday that the January 6th committee is going to release its report, they believe, on December 21st, which is the Wednesday before Christmas. And all that money laundering and obstruction of justice and the pilfering of important top secret documents, all that stuff is coming to a head. And as we learned the other day, the January 6th committee is going to recommend criminal indictments against, well, I guess that's what we're waiting to find out, against who. And the other weird thing about television and Christmas is that the NFL is going to have a full schedule of games on Christmas Day. So whatever your favorite team is, you know, you're watching football on Sunday, you're going to be watching even more this year. Because like I said, you get the full schedule going on. We're getting all the year-end stuff right now. Usually it would be the week between Christmas and New Year's that this stuff would be revealed to us. But it just every year it gets earlier and earlier in the year. Google released their year-end search data yesterday. The stuff that people were most looking up were, just in terms of people, Carrie Lake, Antonio Brown, Amber Heard, Will Smith, Johnny Depp at number one, all because of that trial. Actors, Julia Fox, she was briefly Kanye's girlfriend, Chris Rock, Amber Heard, Will Smith, Johnny Depp, again at number one in terms of actors. In terms of people who passed away, Aaron Carter at number five, Anne Heche, Bob Saget at three, Queen Elizabeth, and then Betty White at number one. Movies, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Batman, Top Gun Maverick, Thor, Love and Thunder, and Encanto at number one. TV shows, number five, House of the Dragon, Inventing Anna, The Watcher at three, Stranger Things, and Euphoria at number one. Musicians and bands, Kendrick Lamar at number four, Mary J. Blige at two, Adam Levine number one. Songs, probably wouldn't recognize any of them anyhow. Let's just skip past that. Athletes, Aaron Judge at four, Serena Williams at two, Antonio Brown at number one. Sports teams, Rams at number five, Bengals at number four, Golden State Warriors at three, Boston Celtics, and the Philadelphia Phillies. The next category is the Hum to Search feature on the Google app. How it works is you tap the mic icon, then you click the search a song button, and then you hum a song for 10 to 15 seconds, and it's supposed to be able to identify it. Unfortunately, what you find then is Never Gonna Give You Up by Rick Astley at number two, and Everybody by the Backstreet Boys at number one. Forbes released their list of the world's 100 most powerful women. Dolly Parton at number 96, Reese Witherspoon 86, Beyonce at 80, Taylor Swift at 79, Rihanna at 73. By the way, we're supposed to be saying Rihanna. People always say Rihanna, and apparently that's wrong. It's like Rhiannon, except without an N on the end. So it's Rihanna. So that's what I will say from now on. And people who didn't hear that explanation right now will start correcting me in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Nancy Pelosi at number 25, Oprah at 24, Melinda Gates at 6, Kamala Harris at number 3, the President of the European Commission at number 1. It was 22 years ago that I was single, and I was dating a lawyer for Monsanto. As a matter of fact, lovely woman was over at her house right about Christmas time, and she had put up her Christmas tree. And I said, oh, yeah, that's right. I'm going to have to go. There's a Christmas tree lot in the neighborhood that I'm going to go to here. She goes, well, that's not real. I said, what? She said, no, it's a fake tree. And I walked up to it, and I looked at it, and I started examining it. This, by the way, almost the identical process I used in meeting her. But excuse me, right down to the I can't believe they're real. Anyhow, back to the tree. So I looked at it. I said, you've got to be kidding. That's amazing. It looks like a real tree. And I went out and I bought one the next day from the same place she got hers. Ladies and gentlemen, I still have that tree today. 22 years later, that is the Christmas tree that we have in our living room. Is it beginning to show signs of wear? Yeah. And a couple of branches fell off and stuff like that, but just stuff them back in. And honest to God, the tree still looks fantastic. And by the way, it still looks real. It was $200 at the time. I believe the last time I saw it was $900. There used to be that Christmas tree place on Manchester, just a little bit east of 270. I think it's in that Lion's Choice parking lot. There was a freestanding building right in the middle of the parking lot. Like it was a fucking photo mat or something, but it was a full-size store. And you would go in there and you would buy all this Christmas stuff. It was great, but it went out of business. Anyhow, it's National Christmas Tree Day today, and it's on the 8th of December every year for a good reason. The random lady who came up with the whole thing thought the 8th seemed good. And if you're doing a real tree this year, the list is for you, because here are the four things that will kill a live Christmas tree, a real one. Forgetting to cut an inch or two off the trunk before you set it up. A fresh cut opens the tree's pores so it can soak up more water. If you don't do that, they'll be blocked by sap and the tree won't last very long. Takes less than 3 hours for dried sap to block the pores. Once the tree is cut, it's pretty quick. Planting it in dirt. Kids might wonder why we put Christmas trees in water, not dirt. The answer, again, is its pores, like flowers. You're just trying to keep it alive as long as possible, and dirt would clog things up. Number three, putting it too close to a heat source. Heaters and radiators can dry it out fast, and then it becomes a fire hazard. The best place for a tree is near a door or window where it might get some fresh air once in a while. And mistake number four, and this is how you kill a tree, forgetting to water it. The general rule is Christmas trees soak up 1 quart of water a day for every inch in diameter the trunk is. Oh, Jesus, they didn't tell me there was going to be math. Anyhow, so if the trunk is 4 inches across, that's a gallon of water every day. Don't kill your tree. Don't set your house on fire. It could possibly have a detrimental effect on your ability to enjoy the Christmas holiday. We've done similar stories to this in the past. This is a really comprehensive version of this. They put together a list of people who got rejected by Saturday Night Live, but made it in show business anyhow. People who, when they were much younger, like in the 90s and stuff like that, tried out and were rejected. Jennifer Coolidge tried out in 95 with Will Ferrell, Sherry O'Terry, and Chris Kattan. 4 years later, she was on her way as Stifler's mom in American Pie in that series. Jim Carrey auditioned in 1980 when he was 18 years old. It would be another 10 years before he just went nationwide in Living Color. Lisa Kudrow tried out in 1990. 3 years later, she was cast as Ursula on Mad About You, which led to her playing Ursula's sister, Phoebe, on Friends. Gina Davis auditioned in 1984 between her gigs in Tootsie and The Fly. Zach Galifianakis tried out in 99. He ended up writing for the show for 2 weeks. David Cross was doing Mr. Show. That's where I think a lot of people discovered him, but he had tried out in 92 and was rejected. Tiffany Haddish tried out in 2013. Kevin Hart auditioned in the early 2000s. Ellie Kemper from St. Louis tried out in 2008. A year later, she was on The Office, and Stephen Colbert auditioned in 1992. And then there are stories like Jennifer Aniston, who they tried to hire, and she turned it down. But, you know, you make it on Saturday Night Live, and you're set pretty much for life if you don't fuck up. We have a Thursday night football game tonight. The Rams hosting the Las Vegas Raiders. It is so pleasurable to watch Stan Kroenke lose. Late night tonight, Steve Martin and Martin Short on Jimmy Fallon. They, by the way, will be hosting the Saturday Night Live this weekend. Jean Smart is on Jimmy Kimmel. She's in that new movie I saw the other night, directed by the guy who did La La Land. The movie is called Babylon, and we'll have a review for you at the tail end of next week. Stephen Colbert has Alicia Keys and Eddie Izzard. James Corden, Olivia Colman, Sam Mendes, and Catherine Zeta-Jones pops up with Seth Meyers. Chip and Joanna Gaines being sued for at least $1 million by their former literary agent. That whole flipping houses thing for TV is such a racket. A new biography details the massive amount of pills Elizabeth Taylor was taking. Amazing that after all these years, she's still making news. Sarah Silverman announced a stand-up tour. Tickets go on sale tomorrow. Closest she's coming to St. Louis is Chicago. The original Avatar is going to air on ABC Sunday, just days before the sequel hits theaters. It's going to be the first time it's ever going to be broadcast on TV. Drew Barrymore wants to remake Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with Cameron Diaz. Drew Barrymore recently revealed that she hasn't had sex in 6 years. Honey, go out and have some sex, because then you'll be thinking about that instead of stupid ideas like remaking Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. Whoa, boy. Whoa, boy. We got us an actual bulletin here. Just before we're getting ready to go here, it turns out the Russians have released Brittany Griner. She'll be home for Christmas. I don't know how fucked up she's going to be after all of this, but she at least is getting out. So it's part of a prisoner swap, and all the details will be coming down later today. But that is huge. All right, birthdays today. Nicki Minaj, 40, at least parts of her are. Sinead O'Connor, 56. Terry Hatcher, still looking good, still getting it done. Terry, 58. Ann Coulter, oh, man, they haven't heard from her in a while, and that's good. She's 61. Phil Collins of Def Leppard, 65. Kim Basinger, 69. And some fairly famous people born on this date: Jim Morrison, Greg Allman, Sam Kinison, Flip Wilson, and Sammy Davis Jr.
Now, on Chicago's talk leader, Big John Howell, 89 WLS.
Big John is off for a couple of days. You've got J.C. Corcoran in here filling in for the next couple of days, and we expect John to be back on the air with us here on WLS on Monday on a date that a lot of people will recall for all the wrong reasons, December 8th. We're going to go to a guy who was a former media columnist for the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and the New York Daily News, now teaching film at Webster University in St. Louis, my pal Eric Mink. Eric, welcome to WLS in Chicago. How are you?
I'm fine. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You were just a kid, I guess, in your late 20s, and you were a young, struggling, up-and-coming columnist for a newspaper in St. Louis. And do I have this right? You were on vacation in New York, just happened to be there in New York.
I took a drive up there with a friend who had some business to do and actually hauling a load of antiques. And we got to New York late in the day on December 8th, 1980. We were wiped out. We were staying at a friend's apartment, and we went to sleep early and got awakened by a phone call from my now ex-wife, who for some reason was watching Monday Night Football, and they interrupted Monday Night Football to say that John Lennon had been shot. And I, you know, jumped up, called the newsroom back in St. Louis, said I happened to be there. I was like 18 blocks from the Dakota where he lived, and I got dressed, hopped in a cab, and got down there right away.
And when you got there, what did the scene look like? Just describe it for us.
By that time, they had closed off 72nd Street. This is 72nd at Central Park West, and they had closed off the street, and they did that because a crowd of concerned people, you know, sort of bereaved people, had gathered outside the entrance to the Dakota on 72nd Street, holding a vigil, and they, you know, cars just couldn't get through. There were cars that had pulled over to the curb and just parked, opened their doors, turned on their radios, and there were, you know, people were carrying portable radios, these transistor radios. This is 1980. And every radio station that was in range was playing Beatles music and John Lennon music, It was incredibly sad. It was really something I'll never forget.
And the word shock and disbelief probably come in. I mean, we live in an internet age right now where people are always putting hoaxes out and stuff like that. Somebody died, and it turns out they didn't die. Back then, we didn't have that sort of skepticism, and yet still, even when confronted with the news from legitimate news sources, I know people just couldn't even believe what they were hearing.
No, that's right. And it was almost as if people had gone there in a hope that, that it would prove to be false. But, you know, we were standing on 72nd. The entrance to the Dakota is just a little bit west of Central Park West. And it was right at that point where this guy started shooting at Lennon and cut him down. There was nothing random about that particular shooting, but it was something that really shook, I think, the whole country, the whole world.
So now you're in the unenviable position of being a young reporter in New York, and all this is happening, and you have to start writing. You have to organize your thoughts and in some way probably try to separate yourself from it emotionally. Do you remember how difficult that process was, and do you remember just a little bit of what you wrote?
I don't remember the words. I actually went looking for, in 1980, I tried to find it online. I couldn't find anything online. Somewhere in this house is a book that the Post-Dispatch put out of reproduced front pages throughout its history, and it's on one of those pages. I can't find the book. But it wasn't possible for me to separate my emotions from that, honestly. I guess there was enough discipline that I could sort of put myself in the mindset of a reporter, but I was reporting on the emotion. Not so much mine, although there was plenty of it, but those of the people around me, and in a strange way, the emotion of the city as it had come together on the street outside the Dakota.
Hard to believe 35 years ago today in that announcement on Monday Night Football. I have the recording, and I've just stopped playing it the last couple of years. It was just too painful to listen to, and it still bothers people. Here it is. 35 years later, as you said, a night and a couple of days in New York that nobody will ever forget. Eric Mink, former media columnist for the Post-Dispatch in St. Louis and the New York Daily News, now teaching at Webster University in St. Louis. Thanks for joining us in Chicago today.
Sure, thank you.
Good to have you aboard. Thanks, Eric.
And in the end, the love you take is equal to the love.
Son, I still miss Jonathan a great deal. I'll always miss him, you know, but it's still brand new.
How did you hear about it?
Barbara's daughter called us up saying John's been shot. That drove me crazy, but you think he's been shot. He's shot in the arm, shot in the leg. And then they came back and they said he's dead. It doesn't help, you know, but it always gets me upset.
When did you see him last, and what was it
I
like?
I saw him on the 15th of November. I was staying in the Plaza. We went over to New York for a while. And I hadn't seen him for a while because, we see each other wherever we are. And he came over with Yoko for an hour. And we had such a great time because they stayed 5 hours. And it didn't matter it was a year between, we didn't see each other. It was always fine when we did, but it was a particularly great time that I had anyway.
We know how this country was affected by John Lennon's death.
Oh, not only this country, the world.
The world. For people who grew up with him and cared about all of you, cared about you, loved you, it had such an effect. Mm. But for you, it just must have been mind-blowing.
It blew me away. But you see, no matter how much it blew me away, I keep quoting this line because it's still an amazing line. I went into the Dakota.
You went to see her right after his death?
Yeah, I was in the Bahamas, and as soon as we heard, we rented a plane as early as we could, and we flew up to New York. Not that you can do anything, but you just have to go and say hello, and if there's anything, there's nothing you can do. Bar say, we're here, and, you know, you want some ice cream or whatever you say, because, you know, your brain is addled at the time. And I said to her, I know how you feel. And the woman, straight as a die, in all honesty, said, no, you don't. Because no matter how close I was to him, I was not half as close as she was to him. And that blew me away more than anything, I think.
And he was happy.
Oh, man, they were happy. You know, they were two people in one.
When you went back to New York to see Yoko,
yeah,
you were so surrounded. It was almost like those days
surrounded.
When you used to...
I was not surrounded.
With the crowds and the
they were waiting
again.
At the Dakota. And there were people, while we were there, shouting up, you know, to Yoko, come to the window, or Sean. Where, I mean, in fact, it would have been better if they'd all left her alone. Because they're not going to bring him back. And it didn't help her by having this whole crowd outside playing his music, which is, you know, fine if they want to do that. But then why don't you play it at home? And then when we came out, I didn't need to hear people telling me how much they loved the Beatles or any of that. When we just lost John. Because I wasn't there to see a Beatle. I was there to see my friend, not relating to this band.
Do you feel that you're in touch with John at times? Or
no, not right now.
Because every once in a while, with love, you know, you look up and say, okay up there, fella.
Oh, well, I believe he's okay. I mean, I believe he's got a good place up there, and he's just waiting for me to come and play the kit. And that big band in the sky, you know. And I believe he's up there with Jimi Hendrix and Elvis and all the rest of them. Because they're probably the ones who stay out all night. The rest are just flying around in the days, and isn't it nice here? All the rockers are up there. Hey, is it 9 o'clock at night? Let's get out there.
Are they playing together? Well, is Elvis singing with John?
Wouldn't make well, I mean, besides laughing, it's got to be a great band up there. Because we've lost a lot of good people.
The death of a man who sang and played the guitar overshadows the news.
By the time Walter Cronkite began the nightly news on December 9th, 1980, the biggest single news story in the world was more than 18 hours old. In America, millions of people didn't find out what happened from a newscast or a special report. They learned John Lennon was dead by watching a football game.
Again, everyone, and we're excited about tonight because the Patriots have not been able to beat Shula and Miami here at the Orange Bowl since 1966.
That night in New York City, a local TV news producer for WABC, Alan Weiss, was in a motorcycle accident in Central Park and taken to nearby Roosevelt Hospital.
One of the EMTs said to me, "You're really lucky. If it was the weekend with all the shootings and stuff that go on, you could be in the ER for hours before anybody sees you, but it's a quiet night tonight."
A 24-yard attempt.
The Dolphins tied the game at the end of the third quarter. Cosell, Gifford, and Fran Tarkenton called the action. In New York, Weiss noticed another patient being wheeled past him.
Two of the police officers come out, and I hear one officer say to the other one, "Can you believe it? John Lennon." I opened up my eyes, and I looked up, and I said, "Excuse me, officer, what did you say?"
Just before 11 that night, outside the Dakota, his apartment building in New York, Lennon was shot four times by an obsessed fan named Mark David Chapman. Dr. Stephen Lin was working in the emergency room at Roosevelt Hospital.
We were told that he had no vital signs, and the nurses, in fact, confirmed no blood pressure, no pulse, no breathing, no response.
I knew that there was a payphone in the waiting room. So I called the assignment desk, spoke to Neil Goldstein, the assignment editor. "Neil, I'm at Roosevelt. I think John Lennon's been shot."
At the time of the call, Lennon was still in surgery.
I literally took his heart in my right hand and massaged his heart, hoping that perhaps when we restored some blood volume, we could restore some cardiac function. But that was not to be the case. And at about 11:15 that evening, John Lennon was pronounced dead.
Outside the hospital that night, Alan Weiss described what happened next.
There was a scream, a woman's voice. I was told, I did not see who was screaming, I was told it was Yoko Ono. "Oh no, no, oh no, oh no."
She said, "No, it's not possible. You're lying. He can't be dead. He was just alive. I saw him."
Before anyone outside Roosevelt Hospital knew of Lennon's fate, Weiss confirmed with his own doctor what happened, and then reported it. In Miami, the Patriots and Dolphins were tied in the closing minutes of the fourth quarter when the phone rang in the production truck.
ABC News called the truck and said John Lennon has been shot in front of his apartment building and died on the way to the hospital. I immediately called ABC News back. They confirmed it to me. I then knew what the next step should be, and that was to call my boss, Rune Arledge.
Through the IFB, I was listening to the phone calls. You're trying to reach Rune Arledge. Howard Cosell, who said, what's going on? What's going on? And, of course, Fran and I looking at each other and trying to keep track of a very important football game.
Rune told me what I should do and how I should do it, being very careful about me giving Howard the news because Howard was friends with John Lennon. And Rune knew that he would be upset.
There he is, John Smith. And he could be on the spot in just a moment.
As the game went to commercial break with 40 seconds left, Cosell was uncertain what to do. He told Gifford off the air what he knew, that John Lennon was dead. In the booth, before coming back live, they had less than a minute to decide what to do.
He was shot outside his apartment, the Dakota apartment building. Fellas, I just don't know. I'd like your opinion. I can't see this game situation for that news flash. Can you?
Absolutely, I can see it.
You can?
You betcha. We've got to. We know it. We've got to do it.
All right.
I don't hang on. It's a tragic moment. And
all right.
This is going to shake up the whole world.
All right. I will get it in. Let Giff call this play, and then I'll get it in.
It was just a situation where you didn't quite know what to do with it. And meanwhile, we decided we would go ahead and go with it.
John Smith is on the line, and I don't care what's on the line, Howard. You have got to say what we know in the booth.
Yes, we have to say it. Remember, this is just a football game, no matter who wins or loses. An unspeakable tragedy confirmed to us by ABC News in New York City. John Lennon, outside of his apartment building on the west side of New York City, the most famous, perhaps, of all of the Beatles, shot twice in the back, rushed to Roosevelt Hospital, dead on arrival.
I thought he handled it extraordinarily well. Honestly, I was still concerned that maybe we had done the wrong thing. As it turns out, we didn't. We informed millions and millions of people that one of the great people in show business had been assassinated.